Good evening. I'm Sarah Donchi.
And I'm Elizabeth Cook. This is just what we're hoping to see. Bay Area reservoirs are filled to the brim after all this recent rain. Our chopper over several reservoirs in the East Bay this afternoon.
Well, like many around the region, Sonoma County's reservoirs have surged with all of these storms. And as Wilson Walker shows us, water managers are trying to save as much of that as possible.
There are any number of ways you could try to measure or capture the significance of this winter, one of them unfolding right now here at Lake Sonoma, where they are making room for more rain.
We've actually encroached from what we call our conservation or water supply pool up into our flood pool, and we now have to evacuate that. And what you're seeing here today is an increased amount of flows to draw that flood water down behind the dam.
Behind the dam is a lake that has transformed in a matter of months. This was the scene back in November. Now it's full enough to draw a steady stream of people who just have to see it for themselves.
Wow, I love it. I mean, you know, 4 years of drought. We live in Santa Rosa, the fire danger, all that. I mean, we had to come up and take a look because we know it was going to be just a pleasant sight to see, and it is awesome.
As for the water being released, the Army Corps of Engineers is being more conservative than in years past. They are using updated guidelines designed to hold more water for drier days ahead.
So the flexibility that is actually being called upon and that we've worked through together over the years is allowing us to hold back more water in the reservoir, significantly more. We're talking about 19,000 acre feet more water in the reservoir that you're near today. And that water can be used in the summertime. So the Corps is consciously waiting and holding that water back until the guide curves and the conditions improve.
And that idea of being flexible, it continues hour by hour. They are watching the storms that are approaching next week. And if they fizzle out a little bit, they can actually back off on the releases, store more of the water that is sitting here in this lake. They want to be more nimble, more agile, and save more water for when the rain finally does run out.
Sonoma County has been under a drought emergency for 3 years. A discussion on whether it's finally time to call it off is set for early next month.
All right, let's get to the weather. Let's head to First Alert Chief Meteorologist Paul Hagen for a look at the new drought map out today. Mm-hmm. And it's great news. I mean, we haven't been able to say good news with our drought in years. I can't remember last time we were able to say that.
It was almost exactly 3 years ago that we had this level of drought across the entire state. It was April of 2020. And, of course, things deteriorated rapidly the rest of that spring and into the summer. This is what the drought map looked like 1 week ago. We had abnormally dry conditions across most of the Bay Area. Now, that doesn't refer to current soil moisture, obviously. That is a long-term, years-long designation. Here is what the new drought map that was released today looks like. Absolutely no designation at all across most of the Bay Area, meaning even for that long-term adding up of all the rain, we're still not in that abnormally dry category, except in northern Sonoma County, a lot of Napa County, and then the northern half of Solano County, and just a little sliver of Napa and Solano counties included in the moderate drought conditions. But the severe drought conditions have been erased entirely from anywhere near the Bay Area, and they've been almost erased from the statewide map as well. 0% of the state in extreme or exceptional drought, the two worst categories. 8% of the state is in severe drought. That's it. 36% in moderate drought, which means 64% of California is not categorized as being in drought conditions. You can see that rapid improvement as we look at the chart from the past year or so. The less of that maroon, red, and orange you see on the chart, the better off we are. And look at all the green just really expanding with all of the rain that we've seen, not just in the Bay Area, but across the entire state over the past several weeks and the past several months. And there's more rain in the forecast. Not yet tomorrow, though. We've got a couple more dry days to go. Details on that coming up in just a few minutes.
All right, Paul, thanks. Thousands of PG&E customers are facing a third night without power after Tuesday's storm. At last check, around 32,000 homes and businesses were still in the dark, mostly in the South Bay.
We've brought in extra resources and extra resource management to help speed up the restoration effort for our customers. The goal today is to complete that assessment process and continue to work on the repairs as well.
One pocket in Pleasant Hill has also been without power since Tuesday when the wind took down multiple trees and power lines in that area. It's left many having to make adjustments at home.
Our two boys have bunked up and slept together to keep warm. Luckily, we've had the fortune of living without power for almost a week before, so so we have that experience to go off of and just really learn to count our blessings and use the resources we have.
And in Redwood City, the lack of electricity is bringing business to a halt. Many restaurants and retail stores have been forced to close until the lights come back on.
And we all know when the power's out, you've got to get creative. St. William Catholic Church in Los Altos held services by candlelight last night. And as Liz was talking about, a lot of businesses in Los Altos in particular are still in the dark and losing money. We met a restaurant owner last night who might not have the power back on until tomorrow. That's St. Patrick's Day, when a lot of restaurants tend to do really big business.
I don't know why it takes this much long to repair in this century. This lifestyle, high speed, everything, you know. We got to start worrying about the rent, because rent coming. Every month you need to pay your rent, business rent, and you need to pay your mortgage.
Stay with CBS News Bay Area as we monitor the impacts of all of these storms. We're always on at KPIX.com and the CBS News app.
Tonight, community members in East Palo Alto will get their chance to press PG&E and elected officials on recent power outages that have plagued their city. Many homes and businesses were left in the dark for days during storms late last month. Some local residents and city leaders say they were frustrated by the lack of communication from PG&E about restoration efforts. A community forum is scheduled for tonight at 6 p.m. at the East Palo Alto Government Center.
And at 6 o'clock this evening, students, parents, and staff will get together for a campus safety meeting after a classroom stabbing. This one happened yesterday morning at Sunrise Middle School. One student was hurt. Here's what we know. Investigators say a 15-year-old attacked a 7th-grade classmate after some sort of a fight. The victim, thankfully, is going to be okay, but some parents who rushed to school to pick up their kids were visibly upset.
It makes you feel a little worried, I guess. They're worried about me. They're like, are you okay? All stuff. That's it.
This is a shock. We've never had anything remotely close to this happening.
The suspect is facing charges of assault with a deadly weapon.
Parents and students in Petaluma are expressing their concerns after a disturbing assault on campus. On February 17th, two math students stormed a high school classroom and attacked another student. This is at Casa Grande High School. Some students and parents and teachers have said they're not happy with how the school handled all of this, saying there was a lack of response and accountability. One parent told us the school administration has a policy in place, but didn't put it into practice. The school district says it wants to work with parents to figure out the best solutions for campus safety.
It's gonna take all of us. It is not one organization or entity or person's responsibility. It's all of our responsibilities, and we have to work together to come out on the other side.
Parents are demanding the school district implement new safety measures and add trained campus staff to handle these issues.
Two people are dead after a really horrific crash on the Bay Bridge. CHP says a Dodge Charger was speeding when it slammed into the back of a slow-moving big rig late last night, killing both people in that car. The CHP says the big rig might have slowed to avoid a separate three-car crash that happened minutes before. This whole mess forced a four-hour shutdown of all westbound lanes. It ended at 3:30 this morning, but the backup lasted until nearly noon.
Pittsburgh police have arrested a couple in a hit-and-run that killed a 17-year-old girl. It happened last Tuesday, the 7th, at Stoneman Avenue and Briarcliff Drive. Police say surveillance video led them to 34-year-old Robert Sanez. He's now facing several charges, including vehicular manslaughter. His 30-year-old fiancée, Vanessa Landeros, was also arrested on suspicion of destroying or concealing evidence.
Stocks closed higher today after big banks offered to lend a hand to another Bay Area lender on the verge of possible failure. That is First Republic. All three major indices rising more than 1% today. The Dow closed up 371. Reporter Michael George explains the U.S. Treasury Secretary is now trying to reassure Americans that the nation's banking system is not about to collapse.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen told lawmakers the American banking system remains sound after the collapse of California's Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank of New York.
The government took decisive and forceful actions to stabilize and strengthen public confidence in our financial system.
In testimony Thursday before the Senate Finance Committee, the Treasury Secretary said bank customers should feel confident their deposits are safe.
We worked with the Federal Reserve and FDIC to protect all depositors of the two failed banks. On Monday morning, customers were able to access all of the money in their deposit accounts.
The Justice Department and the Securities and Exchange Commission are investigating the failure of Silicon Valley Bank after depositors rushed to withdraw money. Some lawmakers are scrutinizing the role played by social media.
Well, we've seen now the very first social media internet-based bank run.
Wednesday, the health of Credit Suisse brought more jitters to Wall Street, but shares roared back after Switzerland's central bank agreed to lend it as much as $54 billion.
The Federal Reserve and the Treasury and the Swiss National Bank and the European Central Bank, they're acting quickly and decisively. So I think that has helped stave off this panic that is real.
Thursday afternoon, 11 banks announced they're putting $30 billion in deposits into First Republic Bank, which has run into trouble in recent days. A joint statement put out by the Treasury Department said, quote, "This show of support by a group of large banks is most welcome and demonstrates the resilience of the banking system."
And President Biden is insisting there is no systemic banking risk that could cause a repeat of the 2008 meltdown. He also says the emergency measures that guarantee the deposits of SVB and Signature customers will not use taxpayer dollars.
Governor Newsom is unveiling new details on how he intends to cap oil company profits. He says the California Energy Commission would have the authority to set those limits, and regulators would be able to fine companies that exceed the cap. Newsom says a profit cap is necessary since the industry is charging much higher prices in California than in other states. A civil rights icon who helped lead enslaved people to freedom via the Underground Railroad is now a permanent fixture at the Millbrae BART station. That's where a new statue honoring Harriet Tubman was just unveiled, titled Freedom's Threshold. It sits next to the newly renamed Harriet Tubman Way. The 12-foot sculpture portrays Tubman in the doorway of her home. It sits on 14 glass bricks, representing the 14 trips she took through the Underground Railroad.
Let this art piece inspire us all to recommit ourselves to work towards a common goal of liberation and unity. For our fates are all intertwined.
The piece was created by local artist Cheryl Derricote.
Okay, today is peak basketball, the epitome.
Peak
basketball. Peak. Yeah, yes. Fans from all over the country have streamed into Sacramento for the opening rounds of March Madness.
Reporter Madison Keevy is with the fans near Golden One Center. Madison, how's your day?
I am great. I'm at Punch Bowl Social, and look who I found. Is Boise in the house?
Yes, it's Boise. Boise. Yeah.
So much excitement here, folks. This energy is what they hope is going to translate to a win on the hardwood tonight. I talked to other fans today who say they feel the city of winning, and they hope it pays off for their team.
The fans are ready for the big dance. You can hear it in their cheers and see it on their faces.
I think the energy in this building is incredible.
As fans roll into G1C, they're happy to be in Sacramento.
They're playing in the doubleheader. Northwestern's playing at 4:30. UCLA's playing at 7 o'clock. Root for both. But if they both win, they play each other on Saturday. That is a family war.
A good problem to have, of course. Now, you talked about the bracket busting that we've already seen here in Sacramento, and these Boise fans assure me that if you've got Boise in your bracket going all the way, that this team is the one that will do it. That's still left to be seen, but the energy here, like I keep saying, it just goes up and up and up. Sacramento is rocking right now, you guys.
The FBI is on the trail of the thief behind a failed helicopter heist at the Sacramento Executive Airport. Reporter Steve Large on some new clues.
A shocking sight following this helicopter heist gone wrong. Whoever tried stealing it from the Sacramento Executive Airport crashed it, the 7,500-pound machine ending up on its side, its blades sheared off. The thief, who tried to fly away in it, ran away from the crash scene turned crime scene.
We don't know what the motive is.
FBI Special Agent in Charge Sean Reagan is leading the investigation into the attempted theft of the aircraft. Federal investigators were able to turn the helicopter upright as they scoured the tarmac and surrounding airport for clues into who did this.
So that will be one of the things that we're looking at, is what is the motive. But the scope would be almost anything you can think of. It could be somebody wanting to take an aircraft for a joyride. It could be somebody wanting to take an aircraft to do some sort of other criminal activity with it.
It was very dramatic.
Kevin Akel works in the hangar next to the crash site and found other aircraft damaged by the helicopter crash.
They're lucky they walked away and didn't kill anybody.
The crashed helicopter is owned by Capital Helicopters. Records show it had been used in the past week for flights to other municipal airports in the Bay Area, Auburn, and Paso Robles.
We're still doing circles around the airplane hangar, going about 20 miles an hour.
In 2021, an airport break-in and police pursuit on the Sacramento Executive Airport tarmac led to increased security, including 24-hour patrols. General aviation airports do not have the same security measures as commercial airports. Now, this attempted helicopter heist turned crash.
The person that attempted to steal the helicopter did actually get it going.
A brazen act, bringing an FBI investigation.
The FBI says they have found no evidence anyone was injured in the crash. They say whoever tried stealing the helicopter tried unsuccessfully to get into several others.
Okay, situation near the California-Arizona border. A train hauling corn syrup ran off the tracks. Freight Railway Network BNSF says there was nothing hazardous on board. Nobody got hurt. This, of course, follows several high-profile train derailments all across the country.
And evacuation orders have been lifted for some Monterey County communities along the Salinas River, but many people still can't return to their homes. Good evening. I'm Elizabeth Cook.
Hello, I'm Sarah Donchi. Reporter Brisa Colon spoke with residents who are desperate for some short-term help.
Even though water is receding in the community of Bajaro, devastation is still being seen across the area. Thousands left in limbo.
It was just has been a real sadness, for all of us, and because they have lost, many of them have lost everything.
Forced to live in cars, hotels, or shelters. Many haven't seen their homes since evacuating last Saturday. Community members gathered at the base of the bridge connecting Watsonville to Bajaro Wednesday, demanding answers from elected officials on when they will be allowed back to their homes.
Tenemos que dormir en el hotel o dormir en carro, dormir en la calle. Hay niños y no hemos pensado en los niños.
The main street right down the center of Bajaro is left empty. The businesses here, their lights are off. No one is coming in, boarded up. You can see the damages, and the street, usually filled with cars here, it is left deserted.
County leaders say the tap water is not drinkable or safe to use, and the entire community is still without power.
People are suffering. It's their most economically challenged communities. We know people want their medication, that food's going bad in the refrigerators. What I want people to remember, though, is the sheriff's office, our first obligation is life safety. And so we want people to be safe, and we can't let them back into the homes until they know, we know that they're safe.
Not only have people lost their homes, but their jobs as well.
Pensamos que si va a haber trabajo como esta naturaleza, y son, no lo podemos hacer nada.
Community suffering flooding many times before, but are trying to remain hopeful.
This community's been through 5 or 6 floods here since this levee went up in 1949. And it's like every few years, they just keep getting knocked down.
In the Santa Cruz Mountains, a house is really right on the edge of a cliff. It was washed out by a landslide. This is in Ben Lomond, obviously scary situation. That slide is also blocking part of Highway 9 south of Holiday Lane. Anybody who needs to get out will have to take the long way around. This is why. We're told Caltrans can't even start fixing this because the hillside is unstable. That hill has been an issue for months and keeps getting worse with each storm. Highway 84 in Woodside is still closed tonight. The road closed in both directions because of this. This is between Portola Road and Skyline Boulevard. Big sinkhole there. Right now, no timeline on when the road's going to reopen.
In Tulare County, more than 60 homes along the rising Tule River have been evacuated. It's threatening to overspill its banks as overflow is released from nearby Lake Success.
There's no way if anybody gets caught up in this waterway that you can survive. It's too swift, there's too much debris, there's too much mud, and that's why we ask for people just to stay out of the area.
One local police chief says it's the most water he's seen in the Tule River since the 60s. Meanwhile, in Southern California, four apartment buildings along the Orange County coast have been evacuated and red tagged after the ground started to give way beneath them. This is in San Clemente. More than a day after it started sliding, the hillside continues to crumble there. Everything from landscaping to lawn furniture just tumbling down that cliff. And even a backyard swimming pool is literally hanging over the edge, ready to pull that entire back deck down with it.
Priority is our resident safety. So we are going to err on the side of keeping them safe and taking care of them during this very difficult time. But the truth is the land over there is still moving, and we have structures that are right on the edge of the bluff, and they're tied into other structures which have failed.
Local officials are calling to add Orange County to the list of counties that need federal assistance ahead of more storms.
Governor Gavin Newsom today announced a plan to reduce homelessness by 15% in the next 2 years, and the Bay Area's biggest city will get 200 tiny homes as part of that effort. The governor's plan involves sending the homes to San Jose, as well as Los Angeles, Sacramento, and San Diego. Then those cities will be in charge of running communities around those tiny homes, providing things like bathrooms, trash pickup, and other services.
I cannot impress upon you how we need to focus with more energy and precision on addressing encampments. There's no humanity in that. People are dying on our watch.
Well, the governor hopes the homes will be set up by the fall. San Francisco and Oakland will not be part of this tiny home program.
Santa Clara County will provide $6 million in relief funds for small food businesses. The Board of Supervisors has voted to exempt about 5,400 restaurants, bars, and cafes from this year's permit fees. The goal is to help small businesses impacted by the pandemic.
First-time claims for unemployment fell again last week. The Department of Labor says claims dropped to 192,000. It's down 20,000 from the prior week. The steady level of weekly jobless claims continues to show that companies are reluctant to let go of workers.
The Biden administration is threatening to ban TikTok if the app's Chinese owners do not sell their stake in the company. The enormously popular platform is used by more than 100 million people here in the U.S. Reporter Nicole D'Antonio has the very latest from Washington.
The Biden administration is turning up the pressure on TikTok. CBS News has learned the White House is now demanding the app's Chinese parent company ByteDance sell its stake or face a possible ban here in the U.S.
The bottom line is that when it comes to potential threats to our national security, when it comes to the safety of Americans, when it comes to their privacy, we're going to speak out and we're going to be very clear about that.
TikTok fired back with a statement saying, in part, if protecting national security is the objective, divestment doesn't solve the problem. A change in ownership would not impose any new restrictions on data flows or access. TikTok CEO spoke with the Wall Street Journal.
This is a priority for him. He said that when he took over as TikTok CEO 2 years ago, his number one priority was to earn trust.
Congress is also taking on the issue. A House committee is calling on TikTok CEO to testify next week about the platform's privacy and security practices, as well as its impact on children. The security concerns aren't limited to the U.S. The U.K. is now following the White House's lead, banning TikTok on government phones. A member of parliament calls the move good cyber hygiene.
It is both prudent and proportionate to restrict the use of certain apps, particularly when it comes to apps where a large amount of data can be stored and accessed.
The Chinese embassy said the decision is based on politics more than facts and that it will ultimately harm the UK's own interest.
Well, the Bay Area may be coming out of the drought, but the seafood industry is still really feeling the effects of it. Fish and Wildlife recently announced salmon fishing would be banned along the coast for the rest of the season because there are simply not enough fish in the ocean right now. Today, people in the salmon industry gathered at Pier 47 in San Francisco. They say the closure will affect more than just their bottom line.
What this pier is all about is crab and salmon. It's the big driver down here. You're looking at restaurants, you're looking at wholesalers, processors, distributors, all these boats that won't be used.
This is the second time California has canceled salmon fishing season. The other time in 2008 was also during a prolonged drought. Okay, the menu options will be pretty much unlimited when Oakland Restaurant Week kicks off tonight. It is one of the best times to try out new restaurants. I love doing that during Restaurant Week.
I'm really hungry.
I know, you could get really good deals. Or you could just go back to some of your favorites. More than 125 businesses have special lunch and dinner menus. And Liz, if you feel like Vietnamese food, which is one of my top
tops.
Does it? Yeah. Tai Ho Oakland in downtown is participating this year.
All right, now to barbecue. Horn Barbecue in West Oakland will have a unique menu this week as well. They set up shop in 2016, and they're known for their Central Texas-style barbecue.
Texas barbecue on the West Coast is a win for me and Paul Hagen, who loves barbecue. If it is Italian, though, that you want to try, Mockingbird is known for its pastas and appetizers, Brussels sprouts. If you like, I love Brussels sprouts.
That looked really good.
And they're crunchy. Yum.
Oh, especially when they're charred like
yes.
that. Yum.
With balsamic.
Oh.
Why not?
Like a little bit of cheese on top.
Yum.
And the Parmesan cheese. And if you're dining out for restaurant week, you can tell they're really, really hungry.
Yeah.
You'll have the option to make a $5 donation to the local food justice organization, Community Kitchens. 100% of the funds raised will go toward feeding homeless residents.
Thank you so much for watching.
Be sure to join us tonight at 10 for a special post-March Madness edition of CBS News Bay Area. See you then.